Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
You know, we're starting the year in very good shape. We finished 2021 strong with a lot of momentum. Prices across the board are well above where they were at this time last year. So we spent a lot of 2021 kind of getting all the ducks in a row, but they're there, and so we're in a pretty good place to begin this coming year.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Daryl Peel says the question isn't whether prices will be higher, rather...
You know, we're starting off with a lot of optimism, clearly forecasting higher prices for cattle across the board. I think it's pretty safe to say something in the neighborhood of 10%, depending on the class of cattle. And it could wind up even being better than that. I think that's kind of the question now is not whether they'll be higher, but maybe how much they'll be higher as we go through the year.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
All right, guys. Bad news for you. The Biden administration has come in and proposed a new rule on WOTUS that would greatly expand the federal government's reach over private property.
Courtney Briggs is Senior Director of Congressional Relations with the American Farm Bureau Federation.
It would rebalance the 101A and 101B objectives of the Clean Water Act. The Clean Water Act says 101A, the objective is to protect the physical, chemical, and biological health of downstream waters, but also 101B, which says that the states have a right to protect their waters. And essentially, this rule would usurp states' ability to protect their own waters. This rule would bring back the troubling significant nexus test, and that's basically a case-by-case determination that the Army Corps of Engineers can use to capture jurisdiction on your land. This test allows the agencies to aggregate waters together to assert jurisdiction, and they use terms that are incredibly vague, like similarly situated and in the region. They give no definition of what that means, and they can very much use those terms to expand their reach and broaden the need for permits. The rule attacks and discredits virtually every point of the Navigable Waters Protection Rule. The NWPR is the rule that the Trump administration finalized, which Travis referenced earlier, and that rule provided the certainty and clarity that the regulated community has asked for a very long time. So AFBF really liked that rule. It allowed farmers to walk onto their property and very clearly see if something was jurisdictional or something is not jurisdictional. You don't have to rely on the lawyers and the environmental consultants in order to interpret the NWPR. And unfortunately, this rulemaking that the agencies have out for comment right now would roll back the NWPR and take it out of existence.
Maybe a larger issue is federal spending. Dustin Scherer is Director of Congressional Relations with Farm Bureau.
I can reference the infrastructure bill. So we passed a $1.1 trillion infrastructure bill, or Congress passed a $1.1 trillion infrastructure bill. It's a hard infrastructure bill. It has a lot of good things in it, things that help get your products to market, roads, bridges, waterways. Also had a lot of money in there for broadband, had a lot of money in there for grid resilience, as you see, energy production kind of changing. That's opposed to what Congress has been discussing since July of last year, which is the Build Back Better Act, which is more of the soft infrastructure, human infrastructure, healthcare expansion, free child care, free community college, stuff that they want to raise taxes to pay for in the long run. Farm Bureau supports hard infrastructure spending. It's counter-cyclical. It actually wards off inflation because it's planned spending over time, and we know where the money's coming from, whereas the tax increase implications of something like Build Back Better, where we just came out of a very tough time for a lot of businesses, where we literally gave them money to pay their employees and then forgave those loans. Now we're talking about trying to recoup that through tax increases. We have a hard time with that. So we have been working as best we can to take some of the worst pieces out of the Build Back Better Act on the tax increase side of things, and have so far been successful. But we're going to continue to work on that in the new year.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
A respected market analyst was that, well, that wasn't too bad.
Not too bad. Well, that's Dr. Dan O'Brien, a Kansas State grain economist, on the latest USDA numbers.
In that the USDA ended up and raised the amount of U.S. corn production from last year, and I think it's projected now at 15 billion, 115 million bushels, and it was 15 billion 60. There were some thoughts that they might lower that too. And, you know, anymore our pattern is to go ahead and make changes like this and then watch the quarterly stocks, and then come the September report, if there's any adjustment to be made, then we whack 80 some million bushels off or something of those numbers. So anyway, we'll watch and see how that goes. But I think the numbers now are what we're planning on. Again, unless there's some surprise out of the USDA, we'll now develop our balance sheets for this coming year with a 15.115 billion bushels of corn. For soybeans, we'll be plugging in 4.435 billion bushels. And again, that's up a little bit. The wheat numbers have been pretty well set for a while. So now we go forward and we start really watching the usage numbers for the supply demand balance sheets. There were some international things to watch. Argentina wheat, again, improved yields reflecting late season timely rains, which is interesting. They've got some dry areas, some wet areas down there. For soybeans in Argentina and Paraguay, dry, hot conditions threatening those crops. You hear a lot of talk in the trade, and some of it's hyperbole, no doubt, but a lot of damage in Paraguay, apparently, and in parts of Argentina. Brazil, in the southern part of Brazil, some damage from hot, dry weather, but generally not bad, if not downright good conditions to the north. So you've got a balancing act going on north versus south. And then we don't watch cotton so much on this show, but cotton's important to Kansas, and in Australia, you've got abundant rainfall favoring a large crop there. So overall, you've got some things coming and going. I just would hop over into the corn supply demand balance sheet. Mm-hmm. And doing a fast survey of the big changes that came into play, you did see the USDA reduce the estimate of Brazilian corn production by 3 million metric tons and raise Ukraine by 2. So almost a net wash in that. For U.S. corn, the USDA did raise food, seed, industrial usage. Most of that was ethanol, up 75 million bushels. No change in feed residual use. Exports were dropped 75 million bushels. And again, that's consistent with the trends that you and I have been talking about, a little bit slower than had been anticipated. On the wheat balance sheet, not a lot of changes in the world numbers. However, what's really noticeable, extremely noticeable, is the drop off that's happening in projected ending stocks. And that's just the world numbers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we try to follow the world minus China numbers. Those numbers, by my own calculations, are about 21.7, 22%, something like that. And that's the lowest we have going all the way back to 2012-13. So here we're trending downward in terms of available exportable world supplies and ending up with worries about dry conditions in the United States, in particularly in hard red winter wheat areas, hard red spring, white, Durham, you name it, all concerns in the coming year, both in the U.S. and in Canada. And, oh, yes, by the way, we've got the tightest world minus China stocks that we have going back at least a decade. So and tight situation.
Again, that's Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien. It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
This is Agriculture Today.
As a sixth generational farmer, I greatly value the farming lifestyle, but it was grieving when I saw dozens of farms closing down around me and I realized that my own farm was not viable for the next generation. And we knew that something had to be done, but there was no option for us to get our animals processed locally. And everyone kept telling us that farmers don't start chicken companies.
At a recent White House roundtable on expanding processing, Corwin Heatwell, founder, CEO, Farmer Foods.
So with no other options, we started a company with a mission to promote and protect generational family farms. And we're now partnered with 73 independent family farmers and on track to exceed 100 this year. And we're also providing poultry products for around 1 million consumers. Our unique and scalable model of partnering with farmers focuses on the financial viability and sustainability, and it brings solutions to the three pain points that exist with the conglomerates. One, the lack of ownership of animals and inventory on the farm. Second, the lack of operational control that belongs in the hands of the farmers. And third is the tournament pay system that plays farmers against each other. And we found that when you empower farmers with ownership and control, enabling farms to be viable and sustainable for the next generation, that incredible success stories emerge of farmers returning to success from the brink of bankruptcy. And you even see the next generation returning to the farm. And we've seen the average age of our farmers now trend about 10 years below the national average. This model has enabled a resilient community of thriving farmers while bringing the consumers the transparent and traceable products that they've been looking for. And we're excited that this administration is focused on increasing the capabilities that create more options for generational family farmers. And we ourselves look forward to partnering on these new programs to expand and touch more farmers and communities. We believe that together, we will continue to level the playing field for farmers and ranchers while establishing a more resilient supply network. So we thank you for your diligence in helping preserve the legacy of the American farmer.
Limited production capacity has hurt the livestock markets in the past, but what will impact the markets the rest of this year? Dr. Darrell Peel, Oklahoma State livestock economist.
There are certainly some things we have to keep in mind, and plenty of things that could put some bumps in the road for this optimistic forecast that we've got right now. I think the biggest one right now you have to be concerned about is this newest wave of COVID impacts. There's a couple of ways that could impact us. One is we could see some disruption at processing plants again. I don't think it'll be anything like the initial pandemic stages were, but we could see some slowdowns that would cause some problems there. The other side might just simply be on the consumer side, and depending on what happens, if we slow down, food service kinds of things, that could have some impact, at least for a period of time, on the beef demand. Beyond that, probably the other biggest factor we're watching right now is the drought situation. And so we've got widespread drought, certainly in the southern plains. We're getting drier. And, a couple of things right now. Wheat pasture is falling apart pretty fast, so our winter grazing is in jeopardy in the immediate run. The other thing, for the next 2 or 3 months, we're going to be really concerned about wildfire, and that's going to be an important thing for producers to sort of plan for or plan, against, if you will. And then, obviously, if we get into spring and we're still dry, then we've got much bigger concerns across much of the country with the potential implications that would have on cattle numbers and decisions that'll have to be made in the first half of the year.
It's Agriculture Today.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from AmeriCotton. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new BollGuard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
One of the questions that people would say is that the demand for fertilizers, all fertilizers, would be increasing. And really, the data on the land, and I use the planted acres of 12 primary crops plus hay, which is by and large most of what we're using fertilizers for in this country, has been going down over time. There's variability there for sure, but has been going down over time. And it wouldn't really support the argument that there's more fertilizer going out.
Dr. Joe Outlaw is co-director of the Agriculture Food Policy Center at Texas A&M on a recent report regarding fertilizer costs.
There'll be some people that might say that higher prices drive producers to use more fertilizer. And frankly, my answer to that is that as an economist, the price of fertilizer is such that they're not going to be using it as a recreational type thing. This is something where inputs are being closely monitored across the board, across all inputs.
Now, Jay Schutte is a Missouri corn producer, talks about the result of higher input cost.
Right now I am in St. Louis attending a conference being put on by the National Corn Growers Association. And just by luck, yesterday, I sat in on a presentation put on by Dr. Pat Westhoff with the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute out of the University of Missouri. And their yield projections that they're putting together for next year, they're actually cutting them by 2 bushel to the acre just because they think farmers are going to trim back their fertilizer application rates trying to make ends meet. This is going to affect consumers as well. This is not farmers just trying to be greedy. You know, right now, in the United States, we have a lot of supply chain issues. We could certainly be setting the table to have supply chain issues now, next year, with the shortages of corn. We can only control so many factors in the growing cycle. The two biggest limiting factors for the corn yield is the amount of nitrogen we put on and the amount of rain we get. We certainly can't control the rain, but we can control the nitrogen. This needs to be looked at very carefully. You know, the corn production cycle is going to be starting here very quickly, and if we get tariffs put in, this could be very, very detrimental to all farmers out there.
Now, it's rare for us to see commodity prices really move based upon input costs, but something that could move the market, Dan O'Brien, Kansas State grain marketing economist, says.
It's already been in as early as the January report. The USDA has chopped 5 million metric tons off of Brazil and 3 off of Argentina for soybeans. So, and again, if dry conditions persist, then you have the possibility of that dry southern area, if that expands in a La Nina year into parts farther to the north in Brazil, then you're affecting the second crop corn that gets planted after soybeans are taken off. So we'll see where all that goes. But it sounds like I'm cheerleading for drumming up the market, so I'm not wanting to do that. But I do want to recognize the risks out there. And there's some real risks as we see this. And it's just so telling to see us, on the one hand, cut U.S. export prospects for some of these major crops. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we're also cutting supplies in the other countries that would be making up those exports in the place of the U.S. So we're coming to a time where those countries are going to have to produce whatever they have and fill those needs. And if not, then those countries will have to come in large part to the U.S. to make up the difference. And that would be quite the market out into the summer of 2022.
It's Agriculture Today.
Take the guesswork out of preparing your cotton for harvest with NanoPro. Utilizing NanoPro's revolutionary nanoliquid technology, your harvest aids go to work faster and more efficiently, increasing leaf drop, reducing regrowth, and helping your cotton be ready when you are. Offering a 3-to-1 return on investment, you can't go wrong with NanoPro. Learn more or find your nearest dealer by calling Tracy Carrillo at 575-639-5110 or visit aquayield.com.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
There are some straightforward breeding programs where we are trying to select for lines that will not run hot, but we're also utilizing what we call new genetics, new genetic technology.
Dr. David Balzenberger is a professor and department head at Texas A&M on hemp research.
And the CRISPR-Cas9 system has started to be used on all of our major crops to move genes around and to have them perform differently. So whether it's a different fatty acid composition in soybeans or whether it's a higher yield potential in corn, we're using the CRISPR-Cas9 system quite extensively. We have started to utilize that system to block THC production in cannabis sativa, and therefore make sure that the plants that are produced are hemp.
So what are we growing hemp for?
There are three major uses for hemp, and we have slightly different production technologies and end utilization for the three types. We talk about hemp grain, which can be used as a feed grain. It has oil, a fairly high oil percentage in it, that has favorable types of oil for human health. And consequently, hemp hearts and parts of the hemp oil have a real possibility in the human food and the pet food market. The second is the cannabinoid production. THC is one particular type of cannabinoid, but there are many related compounds, CBD, CBG, and many others. There are also terpenes in hemp that cause it to smell and have flavorings that can be used as natural ingredients in other foods. And so exploring those uses of the chemical properties, both for medicine, treating things like post-traumatic stress, swelling pain, nausea in cancer patients, those kinds of things can all be explored. But if we're really going to grow a large acreage of hemp, we have to utilize it as a fiber crop. It has a very long fiber as part of the stem. That's where the fiber comes from, that has been used for many years to sail for sails and parachutes. It's why we grew some during World War II, was to make sure we had enough for parachutes and things like that. But it's also used for rope. There's inner part of it, of that stem, that has other properties that can be used as a bulking agent. And so those two uses are probably where we will see the big acreage, and that will require the development of processing facilities to handle the hemp fiber.
And how will the industry grow?
You hit kind of a chicken and egg thing, because nobody wants to put in a processing facility until there's enough acres, and nobody wants to grow enough acres until there's enough market. And we're starting a step back with our research and finding varieties that will work well so that we can be relatively sure that we can provide consistent production. I think of this as a 10-year path. Entrepreneurs always divide by 10, and so they think of it as a one-year path. But somewhere between 1 and 10 years, we expect a lot of commercialization of hemp fiber for special uses in the U.S.
It's Agriculture Today.
The Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show is the oldest and largest event in the beef cattle industry, and we're headed to Houston, February 1st through the 3rd. Everything's bigger in Texas, so you can't afford to miss the massive NCBA Trade Show. Engaging speakers, outstanding education, all for the beef cattle industry. We've gone to Texas for CattleCon 2022, February 1st through the 3rd. Visit convention.ncba.org for more.
Oh, there's nothing like the sound of a new baby calf or the smell of fresh rain on a cotton crop. My friends at Capital Farm Credit share this excitement with agricultural and livestock producers. We want to be your lending partner. Whether you require operating funds for next year's crop or need to buy hay for your cattle, we have a loan that's right for you. Let us finance your operation. CapitalFarmCredit.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, we still have a few gens that are operating, trying to, get through the last of that crop, that 2021 crop that, we've been really excited about. It's been a good crop.
Sean Wade is Director of Public Policy and Research with Plains Cotton Growers.
You know, growers have, really had the opportunity to, like I said, it's kind of rare that we get the opportunity to produce a good size crop, but also have, really good pricing opportunities available to us as well. So everybody's, working feverishly to try and get this crop, the last of it through the gins, and then certainly through the classing process so that we can get those grades back. And, when we look at, progress from a classing perspective, both the Lubbock and Lamesa offices are, of course, certainly coping with some of the same challenges that other parts of the industry have been, when it comes to labor and that sort of thing, throughout this season. But they're making progress on this crop, and those offices are both running right about 68% complete, from what they expected to receive this year. So that's a pretty good indication of kind of where this crop stands, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about, over 80% gen now and moving quickly to the finish line there. So lots of good things happening. It's just, maybe not as fast as a lot of us would like sometimes when we have these pricing opportunities like we do in the market today.
And he talks about the recent Beltwide Cotton Conference.
A lot of information on, some new variety offerings, and then also, kind of marketing and farm program outlooks as well. We're getting, rapidly approaching the starting point, for the 2024 farm bill debate. And so that's, that's something that everybody's kind of, beginning to get a lot more interest in. And then just, again, just the general questions on where's this market going to go, and that sort of thing. And what are these prices going to do, and how is demand looking? And all that information was available to producers, through presentations that were at the Beltwide. And like I said, we had a really good meeting, a lot of great information that was shared. Also got some well-deserved accolades, for some producers here in the area. I don't know if you had heard, but Mark and Greg Howard from Dalhart, Texas, were named the 2021, actually, Cotton Marketers of the Year at this year's Beltwide for their efforts and activities over the last year and really throughout their careers. They're a real asset to their areas and to this area as a whole. Very progressive producers have good ideas when it comes to marketing and eager to share that information that they have with their neighbors and everything. So, very well deserved honor for Greg and Mark Howard up there in Dalhart. And that marks actually the second year in a row that we had the Cotton Marketer of the Year come out of the High Plains of Texas. If you remember, Barry Evans from Crest, Texas, won that award the previous year for 2020. So a lot of good information. Like I said, I would encourage folks to really look into reacquainting themselves with the Beltwide Cotton Conferences the next time around. I believe it's going to be in New Orleans next year, and so a good opportunity to have a good time, but also get some really good information to kind of help you navigate the markets and the production challenges that we haven't gotten.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The largest change in cotton in USDA's January WASDE report was a relatively large reduction in U.S. production.
They cut the yield estimate by 36 pounds per acre. And the result was to reduce U.S. production by 660,000 bales.
World Ag Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekanowski says the cotton export forecast also has been reduced.
And that just reflects the fact that export pace hasn't quite, you know, lived up to what our earlier expectations were, relatively slow pace, especially to China.
Meanwhile, there were no changes this month in cotton prices.
Prices right now are remarkably strong. They have been for the past several months. And yeah, year over year, so right now our season average market price of 90 cents per pound, that would be up 23.7 cents per pound from last year.
This is Stephanie Hove in Washington, D.C.